We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that fine gentleman over there in sunny, springy, summery.
Yeah.
Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I am wearing short shorts. I mean, for me, about 7-inch inseam, something like that. So, you know, the legs are breathing. I got flip-flops on. I am having a guest. We are having a guest on that we're especially always excited to have on. And this is how I like to talk about Matt Brown and his appearances on the show. He is smart. He is well-read. He is well-connected. And he is here to answer our questions about, you know, the future of the sport and the business of the sport and things happening behind the scenes. And we get to yell at him. Though we don't yell at him, we yell near him. We yell around him in his vicinity. And he takes our emotion and atomizes it into sense and insight. And so I'm especially excited for that. So if I seem hopped up on caffeine or some other sort of altering substance, it's just the natural enthusiasm I have for a show like this.
You forgot to add that he's got a Bob Diaco caliber hairline.
Oh my
as
God,
well.
Absolutely.
Yep. We're going to have Matt Brown from Extra Points on momentarily here to talk about all things NIL, transfer portal, NCAA. The sport's changed. It at least
yes.
feels like it's changed a lot in a very short period of time. And we could think of no one better to bring him back and talk through what it all means, because Matt does this again for his newsletter, Extra Points. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking with Matt Brown for the better part of an hour here. So stay tuned
yep.
for that.
Love
this
it.
Episode, all of our episodes brought to you by our good friends over at Geico.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Solid Verbal Podcast. We do 2 episodes publicly every week on Tuesday and Thursday. We also do a bonus episode where we answer your questions, part of something we call the Brew and A. You can go on out to verballers.com for more info on our Patreon. We release this episode, all of our episodes, a little bit early via our early mm-hmm. access promotion. You can also view video versions of all of our interviews and shows. It's available out there as well, in addition to extra bonus content like the pizza show, Dan, that we got to put together.
That's true. That's
still
true. It's very true. Our Patreon, our Verballers at verballers.com, it's not a collective per se, but it's not a collective.
It's not
it's
not a collective.
Not a collective. So I would get involved with it right now.
Last but certainly not least, solidgiveaway.com is where you can throw your name in the hat to win that Frank Beamer signed mini helmet. We will draw the winner at the end of May. Again, just a few quick, free, and easy steps that you need to go through in order to get your name in the running. But
yeah,
folks have been very interested in the Frank Beamer helmet. So
Frankie
got a couple
Beams.
Weeks yet if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Dan, we invited back one of our favorite guests. It is because a lot is going on in this universe of college football. Matt Brown of Extra Points with Matt Brown, which you can find at extrapointsmb.com. It is a daily newsletter on all the off-the-field forces that shape college sports, from FBS to NAIA. Matt Brown, sir, how are you?
Hey, fellas, it's always good to be back here. I'm doing well. The sun is out. I've joked about this a lot, and I think with you guys, we're all blessed to be working and writing about this sport in interesting times. Even if we wish sometimes it wasn't so interesting, but as someone who hates being bored, this is great. There's always something to dig into.
Interesting to the extent that we just talked a little bit off air. None of us have taken a vacation in quite some time.
No, I did. I sort of did.
You were working. That was a working vacation.
So, yeah, I recorded episodes while I was away. And you and I mean, it wasn't vacation, but we were in New York. And we did record an episode in a hotel room. So we got away and worked. So that it's pseudo. It counts a little bit. So I'll take it.
Yeah, it's working. It's working without home field advantage, right? It's
true.
Working in a different place, looking at different walls. That still counts for something.
Correct.
Absolutely. So look, we had you on back in February, and I feel like a lot has changed since then. Now, collectives, if not much more a thing than they were then, are definitely more front of mind for a lot of college football fans. Sort of like the new podcast, right? Everyone's got a collective these days, at least they're willing to talk about it. We've seen a star receiver, Jordan Addison, enter the portal officially for professional development, unofficially because of, I think, NIL offers or opportunities. We have seen the NCAA over the last couple days ride in like a white knight and pass some retroactive rules, which hopefully you can help us decipher. And on Tuesday, on your website or through your newsletter, Extra Points with Matt Brown, you wrote a piece about the FBS potentially splitting off, or I should say momentum perhaps building around the FBS splitting off and doing their own thing separate from the NCAA. So a lot of this is going on. All of it, by the way, underpins the ivory tower of mainstream college football analysis with a lot of kids these days type of commentary. Did I leave out anything important of note?
Beyond all of that, we also still have the transformation committee that's meeting right now to change scholarship limits, change what it means to be a Division I institution, change how postseason tournaments work and revenue and everything. So, yeah, just beyond a lot of the basic assumptions that kind of underpin college athletics as we know it for the past 30 years being reevaluated. Very slow offseason so far. Really makes you pine for the days when we had to pretend to be really angry about satellite camps.
Last time we had you on, you were pretty measured about NIL. And I believe your stance then was, look, there's a class of elite players. They're going to do fairly well from this. That's the way it's designed. Nothing earth-shattering, though. Everybody else stands to make a buck. At least they'll have opportunities. Since then, we have seen the Jordan Addison thing. And we've also had news about the $8 million collective with the alleged player from Tennessee. Things have changed, at least, I think, from the perception of the everyday fan. There is this notion out there that the sport has rapidly evolved in a way that feels wrong and feels dirty and feels different. Has your view, as somebody who covers college football and specifically this corner of college athletics, has your perception changed at all since we last spoke back in February?
Honestly, it has. But I think maybe not in the same way that other fans might think about it. So forgive me if this is getting a little bit too into the weeds. But I think when we last spoke, and this is was part of my line when I would talk to athletes themselves or talk to administrators, was, you know, I really believed in this idea that lots of different athletes could still make some money through marketing deals that were designed to help a company actually make money. You can go onto a marketplace, you can cut a social media deal, you can go back and you can work with your high school athletes in your hometown. And
You're a romantic.
A romantic. And let me be clear, that still exists. People are still making money from that. One thing that I have seen in this industry, though, I think over the last several months is the legit, I don't want to say legitimate, like the market-driven NIL world is simply not as large as I think the collective business community thought it was going to be last June. And there's a couple of different reasons for that. The biggest one, and I'm trying to beat this into the skull of everybody here, I don't think as fans and even reporters, we fully appreciate how little free time a college athlete has. It's not a 15 or even a 20-hour week time commitment. If you're a wideout at Pitt, you can't just go decide to study abroad in Italy. Like, you've got weights and meetings and other training and all those things here. And so a lot of people have decided, I don't want to spend that tiny limited amount of free time chasing ads on Instagram. And then when I do decide to do that, what brands are realizing increasingly is that athletes, and I say this with love, by and large are pretty bad at social media. Mm-hmm. And that's, and you know, they're not Twitter brain poisoned maybe the same way that I am or some of our reporter colleagues are. And if they're going to shill something on Instagram, the big brand is realizing, if I worked with a mom blogger or if I worked with a professional influencer, somebody who has 30 hours a week to invest in production quality and lighting and campaign metrics, I'm going to get a better experience than a 20-year-old who's doing this on their way to class. So I did a couple of these deals in last July, September, October, like not me, like I mean, I did, but I'm talking about the Buffalo Wild Wings of the world. And now they have close to a year of data, you're seeing a pullback. And so I think we have to acknowledge that many of the valuations, hypothetical valuations that we see on social media and that get sent out by some of these companies, which I think get reshared because people want to celebrate athletes, they're just not accurate. And the actual market-driven endorsement world for athletes is not as large as I thought it would be last February. It's not as large as a lot of venture capital firms thought it was going to be last July. It could get that way in the future, but I think it is fair to say, overwhelmingly, of the total NIL market, it's dominated by collectives and it's dominated by deals that are not market driven, but recruitment driven.
Right. And we're now at the point where there appears to be attempt at governing and preventing and legislating and enforcing retroact. Like, there's all sorts of different pillars about how the NCAA or conference, whoever is going to be doing any of this governing and enforcing, nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. As I read everything, it's like, okay, players have value, but schools aren't paying, boosters aren't paying specifically, but they're putting money into a fund. Like, in a way, it legitimizes value because players intrinsically, we're talking about football players, but all sorts of athletes have value. Yeah. We're talking about football players. They have value. And now we're saying, okay, well, boosters should continue to not have contact. But of course, collectives work around that by having non-boosters run the collective and somebody's talking to a coach or recruiting coordinator somewhere. Doesn't it feel like we're like, when there are explosions in big cities, I'm sorry, this is going in a number of big directions, but it's
okay.
Like,
no, go on.
Illegal gas lines plugged into each other, you know, everything is jerry, like, it just feels like this is not at all a sustainable way to run what is now a $1 billion industry. My question to you is, sorry,
no,
this is
please,
a long-winded way of saying this, doesn't this all feel like theater? Doesn't this all feel like there's nobody in charge and there's value for players, and yet we have to like make everybody go through a crazy number of hoops to convince ourselves that it's okay?
Yeah, I definitely think the way this is set up right now is dishonest.
Yeah.
And it is. I also think that it is, while not as exploitive as the previous system, it's still exploitive. Some of the people that are doing the exploiting are different. And I would rather have a little bit of money than no money. But I don't want to sit here and pretend that this is okay. We did it. A couple of the economists were right. We fixed college sports.
Right.
And but to your point, by creating this system where we, rather than have the athletes enter into any kind of employment agreement or have some of the structure that they would enjoy in literally any other athletic marketplace in the world that I'm aware of, mm-hmm. instead by kind of doing this wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're kind of laundering money through increasingly fake charities
right.
to get to these athletes here. And I look at this and think, man, forget what you thought about like exploitation for the NCAA. Some of this is tax fraud. Some of this
yes.
is like actual capital C crimes. And so like I admit, and as somebody that I think was maybe a little bit more romantic than I guess in retrospect I should have been about how this can change lives and help athletes, I definitely look at this world right now and think some of the system sucks. There's no way around it. And this is coming from somebody that I think is generally pretty pro athlete and has advocated for athletes on my platform. I don't feel good about a lot of the intermediaries in a way that this money is moving around right now.
In a way, it legitimizes things in that there are contracts being signed, in that we assume athletes and people who have the best interests of these athletes, whoever those are, if they're parents, guardians, whoever, are paying taxes. It's no longer, on a certain level, recruiting is no longer a cash business. It's no longer an under the table. So there are interests, be it the IRS, be it somebody, who say it's better than it was. It's better than it was that we can sort of track income better than we ever could. But on a certain level, we're still talking about nonsense. We're still talking about schools and conferences signing humongous TV deals and then are hands off, allegedly, when it comes to the labor force monetizing their own value. And so I understand there are different contracts, be it TV contracts. And I think it was it Jack Swarbrick who said that, you know, 2030, whatever,
yeah,
there's a reckoning coming because that's the end of the ACC TV deal, I believe, was the allusion he made. Is there any way that everything can be blown up in an advantageous way before then?
Sure. There's I think, a couple of different landmines that could happen before the early 2030s.
Yeah.
One of those, and one that I know that athletic leaders are very cognizant of, is the federal court system. There's another case working its way through the system right now. Incidentally, you know, not far from Ty's backyard, it involves, I think, at least one Patriot League team. It's Lafayette, right? I think one of the teams named in the case, where and Villanova and a couple other small schools are suing to be considered to be employees and say that these schools owe us minimum wage, and that's working its way through the court system. We're not. The analysts I talked to said don't expect a resolution until like late next year at the absolute earliest. But that could theoretically create something where the government says, you can't keep doing this. Athletes are employees and they can collectively bargain. You have to give them contracts. You can fire them. You have to treat them the way everybody else does. And if that's the case, we have to blow up most of the scaffolding that's kind of holding up a lot of this system together. Right. The Congress could do this potentially sooner. And I think that that's substantially less likely. And I know that's why people, you know, tune into College Football Podcasts is to hear about what various senators are going to be doing. But there are federal lawmakers that have proposed really ambitious changes. And that is something that could happen, right? The other thing is the National Labor Relations Board, the entity that, you know, that initially said Northwestern football players could attempt to unionize, has basically telegraphed saying, hey, somebody else should try to unionize again. And we'll, you know, I think we'll look over you favorably. And I think it's telling that the two people that have filed complaints so far have not been athletes. They've been advocacy groups working on behalf of athletes. I also think this is very unlikely, but that could happen too. So you have those three landmines, and then you have the television landmine where, but over the course of the next several years, the earning gap between the Big Ten and the SEC is likely to dramatically increase over the next several years. Right? I believe, you know, what people have been telling me, like the next Big Ten deal, which is going to be finalized in a few weeks, probably going to be north of $1 billion.
Right.
We'll be looking at the end of this decade of Northwestern and Purdue and Minnesota getting close to $100 million a year, which is not what Notre Dame or Wake Forest or Utah will be getting. Maybe that causes some other tensions. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know, and I know that this makes for terrible podcasting and terrible sports radio, but I feel like the more that I get into the weeds of this world, and I feel like I'm pretty in these weeds, the harder it is for me to come up with a pithy take because there's so many unknowns that I can't sit here and say, like, yes, Notre Dame is going to be playing in the AFC South in 2028. Like, I who knows, man? Like, a lot of things could change.
So you mentioned landmine. Dan, you used the word landmine. Matt, you did as well. Is the landmine just because suddenly we're talking about all these zeros? Is the landmine because the money is so large, because the landscape has changed, and where we're headed is to a place that college athletes, perhaps on the back of some new rights that have been granted to them by legislatures or the courts or wherever, they start saying, okay, now we need a piece of this?
Yeah, I mean, you have people saying that right now. And it isn't just that the total amount of money has changed and it's exploded over the last 20 years. But I think the obligations that we've asked of athletes have changed too. What a traditionalist, I think, would tell you is, like, listen, these young men are getting an education. That is something that we didn't get, or at least a free education, and that's a very expensive compensation. That's enough. And we have to reckon with the fact that not only have revenues gone up, but athletes generally don't get to pick their major. They don't get to do internships or study abroad the same way that maybe any of us did. You are limited in what classes you can actually take, and your college experience narrows considerably around the athletic building. And I think you don't have to be a labor agitator to look and say the money's going up. In many ways, you know, my benefits are going down. My health risks are going up. Something eventually has to change. This is what we're seeing with NIL, I think, is part of that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Is there a possibility that there was an inflection point at some point, whether it was when a certain TV contract or contracts or something were signed, and we had an opportunity collectively as a sport? I am not a part of the sport directly, but was there a moment where the NCAA, with major conferences, whatever, could have said, okay, this is an insane amount of money. This is a bigger business than college football was ever intended to be. Let's think about the future of the organization of the sport. And they simply said, we'll get to it another time. Right? And now, Is it possible? We are just too far gone to do anything meaningful when there are so many interests with so many competing priorities.
I definitely think there were a couple of points where different leadership could have changed things. Like if we go back to the Oklahoma v. Regents Supreme Court case, okay, 1984, I think, that's what deregulated college football television broadcasts. That allowed leagues and teams to sign individual deals. That's what initially turned the cash spigot on. And you really began to see that in the early 1990s. That is something when the SEC realized, like, oh my gosh, we can quadruple our income here.
Yep.
You could have done something. You could have done something in the early 2000s, I think, too, with the next run of the really big mega contracts. And that didn't happen. Also, there was an opportunity, I think, more recently. The NCAA didn't have to appeal Alston to the Supreme Court. They got a mostly favorable reading. And Don Remy and Mark Emmert and I think a couple of their legal counsel gave them what turned out to be really bad advice. You could have changed a couple of things there. Now, and I know it's really easy to beat up on the NCAA. Like, obviously, your options are limited. We could talk about that with collectives in a second, I guess, are much more limited. The bigger thing, I think, for me, isn't just that you have a limited number of potential options. I think we've earned the right to be skeptical of the people making those decisions.
Yep.
We have a bunch of new commissioners in a lot of ways that don't have a lot of personal trust with each other, some of them don't really have really deep college sports experience. And one of the things that really was kind of changed my thinking about this was the discussion to expand the college football playoff, where you had every commissioner in that room wanted to do it. They agreed on the major structural things. And there were a couple of provincial, local, smaller sticking points, and they expensed a ton of meals and went to a bunch of conferences, and they couldn't get it done. So that makes me think, if you couldn't get something done where you agreed fundamentally about what you wanted to do, how am I supposed to trust these same 12, 15 people to fix something where they don't agree on what they're supposed to be doing? In other industries, you would be fired. They would bring in somebody else for that. And that doesn't really happen in college sports. So even as someone who I think is innately an optimist, it's hard for me to look and go, well, this time, you know, the Craig Thompson's going to get it figured out. You know, this time Kevin Warren's going to get it fixed. Like, I'll believe it when I see it.
It reminds me a lot of, like, if we go back to the late 90s, the early aughts, this sort of inflection point that we had with music, where suddenly you could get it online. And it was clear that this was a new way that things were going. And instead, the RIAA chose to fight it.
Yep.
Until they couldn't. And suddenly it was like court cases out the wazoo. Eventually, they found a way to turn on their own spigot and turn that into a different business model. But the NCAA fought this for a long time, and they found themselves in a really awkward spot now. Ross Dellinger, I'm sure you saw it, Matt, wrote a long piece for SI about a week or two ago. I can link it up in our show notes about how boosters via collectives were getting involved in recruiting. And again, it's long. Everyone should take a chance to read it because it is thoughtful. Ross does a great job. Now the NCAA swoops in with new rules, I guess, to try and curb that practice. Where I'm confused is that my initial impression, as Dan alluded, was that the NCAA was sort of in this loveless marriage with college football, in a sense, because it sort of confirmed that when it passed NIL. Like, you guys go do what you want. We sort of don't want anything to do with it. As long as we're not directly tied to it, it's cool. But now it's taken this turn. Now they want to get more involved. I can't imagine, Matt, they have the bandwidth to keep track of, let alone investigate, all of these different things that are going on. How does the NCAA, via these new rules, see itself getting involved? How does the Matt Brown plan for the NCAA foresee how the NCAA should be involved with NIL in this new world?
I think, let me try to answer the first question, like the first part of that question. I think there are three things that fans should know about this potential new regulation, or I guess clarification of an existing rule. One is your point about the NCAA not having bandwidth, I think is super important. There's less than two dozen investigators right now employed in Indianapolis. A bunch of these people left during COVID, and they weren't rehired, and morale in that particular department, you know, was really low. People did not like going to work every day thinking, like, it is my job to be the cream cheese police. And Indianapolis has talked about wanting to restaff, but that's a very good question. Setting aside the legality of the rules, the morality of the rules, the practical application of the rules, Gene Smith is coming up here saying, like, we can't let these things last for 5 years. If we're going to get involved in the collective space, we're going to turn things around in 6 months. Like, I would look at that and go, you and what army? Because you literally don't have the people. The other thing I think that's worth noting, you know, on that note, though, there's a lot of, I think, economists and attorneys and some sports commentators are speculating, you know, pretty forcefully that none of these rules would stand up in court. I think many people are familiar with Justice Kavanaugh's concurring opinion in the Alston case, where he kind of dared somebody to bring amateurism it's like, I would be willing to strike down the entire thing. I think it's important to realize that that's a concurring opinion. It wasn't the opinion opinion. If it was the opinion opinion, he would just written that in there. Clearly not every justice agreed with that particular point. And there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court would ever hear a case like this. Like, as I have talked to attorneys, the idea of the NCAA saying, we're not going to cap the amount of money you can earn from NIL. We're only capping who can participate in that market during a very specific window. Because we're not saying you can't do a deal with the booster once you're already on campus. They're only trying to tell people you can't do a deal with the booster before you're enrolled. That might stand up in court. Sometimes you win in court, sometimes you lose. I think it is impossible to conclusively state the NCAA can't do that. Which then I think brings me to the third thing I think is very important for everyone to know here. Everyone knew these rules ahead of time. Like, this was not a new anything that was dropped earlier this week. Schools the initial guidance from the NCAA last July said, hey, these deals can't be inducements to get anyone to go anywhere. You as an institution have an obligation to monitor your boosters, and all of these deals are supposed to be recorded to compliance. So many of the people running these collectives were so confident that the NCAA could or would do nothing that they were exceptionally sloppy in setting up a lot of these deals. Mm. And so if literally anybody in Indianapolis, I think, looks at some of these contracts, they're going to find people like basically saying like, I committed recruit crimes, notarized booster so-and-so.
Right.
Where it's going to be so easy to prove that someone stepped out here that you might not need 20 investigators. And a bigger reason, biggest reason for this too, not just for the collectives, it's through the agents that are representing these athletes, many of whom are not real agents. Because you don't have to be a real agent to represent a college right. athlete. And so there's so many people that are getting into this world that were the same runners and uncles and kind of third-party people that were, you know, always boogeymen over the last several years. Now they just hung up a different sign on their door and said they're a marketing agency. And they have, I think, done their athletes a disservice by making it very easy to get them into trouble if anybody snoops in.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. Who gets in trouble? Because the schools have clearly tried to build a firewall between themselves and the business dealings here. You've got third parties, boosters, collectives, businesses, shell corporations, whatever, that are actually funding these athletes. Ultimately, it's the athlete that signs on the dotted line. So is it such that they're given bad advice, they sign the agreement, and when the whole ship goes down, they're the ones that take the fall? That doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't seem fair. And this is part of why I write about this a lot. And I mean, and not to get really political, but like, that's also kind of how a lot of financial dealings and like the justice system works. Like when the deal goes bad, is it the 20-year-old football player that gets in trouble or the billionaire?
Right.
Generally, odds favor the billionaire, right? The booster could get in trouble insofar as the NCAA forces them to disassociate from the school, which to some people is a big penalty. To some people, they don't care. The school could theoretically get in trouble for failing to build a culture of compliance, failure for institutional control. We'll see that might take 6 years. Championships are forever, even if they have to take the banner down. But it's the athlete who could lose eligibility, the athlete who could be in trouble with the IRS, the athlete who generally, I think, faces the most risk. And that's why I say this is still an exploitive market. It's just a different kind of exploitation, because the biggest risk, in my view, is still being shouldered by the individuals that have the least representation and the least ability to handle it.
Who is this for? Who is this sort of governing and enforcement for? Right? Like that? Like,
yeah.
Okay. So we have smart people at the NCAA on a certain level.
Yeah,
they know if they say, right, they know that if they say retroactively, we're going to go after boosters who are dealing with recruits in an illegal way, whatever, here's what the boosters are going to do. They're going to do exactly what anybody else who is experienced and motivated to commit a financial crime is going to do. A booster is going to say, I am no longer dealing with the collective, but I'm donating $5 million to Steve's Jeans. And oh, look at that. A blue chip quarterback has a $3 million deal with Steve's Jeans, and it's going to be laundered elsewhere. And we don't have the forensic accountants. And what's going to happen is if somebody is motivated, they will always find a way. Right?
Yeah. I watched The Big Short too, right?
Like, right. What is all this effort for? What is it, the end game is to what? Make Purdue fans happy? That like, what? Who are we doing this for?
Man, it's a great question, because this system, you know, who it benefits right now are the middlemen, right? There's a new cottage industry of compliance software companies, NIL marketing agencies, agents, both above board and below board.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not sports business newsletters. I mean, I wouldn't categorize them as diabolical rent seekers. But yeah, like there's this whole like new world that kind of gobbles up all the money from that inefficiency. Like I look at this, and it sounded like maybe you two would agree. My mind has changed on this. I think it'd be a lot easier to just say, look, you're employees. And that doesn't necessarily ruin everything. Graduate students are employees.
Yep.
And that hasn't ruined college. We could say, as part of your employment agreement, you have to go to chemistry class and you have to, you live in company housing or something. But we're going to do this so Steve's Jeans doesn't, or the real estate prince of Shreveport, or whoever it is that's getting involved in here. Maybe that's where we go eventually. Like right now, you're right. There's been an enormous demand of human capital and human ingenuity and reportings and all these other things for something that when you describe it that way, sounds extremely stupid.
Yeah, I don't understand what the effort, all of this effort is for if there's no structure to the sport. Like it almost, to me, sounds like if we're figuring out how to organize the sport so that we have employees, so that we have, you know, everything is on paper and above board and there are certain contracts and buyouts and everything like that. I also now start to wonder how many people care? How many fans that are not on Reddit, that are not listening to podcasts, that are not subscribing to excellent newsletters like Extra Points, what is the percentage of people who consume college football that are just Saturday fans, that just tune into a TV game of because they went to Maryland, because they went to UCF, or they go to the games because they can see their buddies from college and eat bratwurst and corn or whatever? Like, are we all freaking out in this tiny little echo chamber of like online college football fans when the majority of people, if it's the case, just want to go outside with their friends and eat smoked meat?
And bratwurst and corn, of course, the state.
It's a very weird combo.
You're
clearly,
yeah, you're clearly assimilated here in Illinois.
Yeah.
No, I think about this a lot. And, it's, and I may not be the best person for this prison because half of my audience are ADs. And
yeah,
like
of course.
Coaches and people in this world. This is my theory, and this is somewhat data informed, but I could be wrong. Is that there were a lot of people last summer that were like, I'm not interested in college sports if anybody gets any money. Like I want to pretend everyone is 1928 Yale.
Right.
And when they saw the first run of NIL deals, I think, which were commercials, and you got to see the Kentucky football player do the funny ad for the dentist, mm-hmm. and you look at this and think, actually, this might not only is this not a negative experience, it can be additive. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I get a different relationship with the players than I had before. I think very few people looked at last football season as like, I'm out of this because of NIL.
Right.
The one place where I think we honestly could see this challenge, where Saturday fans say, this isn't for me anymore, is it reminds me of what happened with Jordan Addison here at Pitt. And
sure.
Like, I think
totally.
On one hand, you could say, hey, look, Pitt, y'all, your best wide receiver you guys got from Akron. And like you bring in people from the portal too. The portal giveth, the portal taketh away. And as we've all learned here, even schools like Notre Dame and LSU and Oklahoma are not immune from talent leaving in some way. So the game recognized game. We shouldn't get complain about this. But I think if a Pitt fan says, I know I'm not going to win a national title, and I know that I'm coming to the game here to eat smoked meats with my friends. But I want to root for us to go 9-3 and ruin somebody's day because that's what
totally.
That's what the Pitt experience is. And if I feel that we can't actually develop any 3-stars and turn them into NFL players and they will leave before we ever get anything out of it or before we can ever achieve that 9-3, then it no longer feels worth it for me to bring in that emotional investment. Like this is part of the reason I don't follow baseball anymore. If other
right.
people do, great. I grew up in Ohio. And I thought like anybody good that's plays for Cleveland is going to get traded to a big budget team. I get 3 years with them and the team might be good once. I'm 35 now. I have other hobbies. I'm just going to not spend that emotional investment.
Right.
I think that's a legitimate possibility for the Boston colleges and the Purdue's and the Oregon States of the world, because in baseball and in international soccer and other places, there's a transfer fee. There's draft picks. You can still sell hope.
Right.
I'm not saying I co-signed this agreement, but I don't want to gaslight somebody, pretend it's not a real thing, to hear a fan of a BC say, I'm concerned now you can't sell me hope if this
totally.
Is this world. And that's something I think the collective we have to address, you know?
And doesn't that fall under the, let's organize the structure of how players go to schools and let's structure transferring and let's structure what a player owes a school or what a school is entitled to. Like we have the grad transfer thing. We're encouraging education. Somebody graduates from an institution. Here is your big, your pot of gold at the end of the academic rainbow. You can transfer without penalty and play. Shouldn't that sort of idea encourage more organization and structure for what, a letter of intent actually means and actually stands for? Shouldn't the people who say, well, coaches pay a penalty when they, up and leave, that the new school has to pay a buyout and thing? Shouldn't there be, I don't know if it's employment structure, but aren't we pointing in that direction if we want more guardrails? That's, you know, that the big term that everybody's using. Shouldn't we want that?
I get that argument. When I talk to administrators, they come back and say, we're just really limited to what we're allowed to do legally. Right.
Right.
If the NBA wants to do this and they sit down like, listen, we think it's in the best interest of professional basketball for fans in Indianapolis and Memphis and Cleveland and Sacramento to believe they have a chance of retaining hometown stars. Therefore, we're going to negotiate with the union and make it, you know, create rule changes to make it easier for those teams to do that. You negotiate with the union. Like, you can't unilaterally do it. So I don't want to say it's impossible to build more of a structure. It sounds like we're heading towards a world where there'll be a transfer window, right, where the recruiting calendar will be simplified. And I think that should make things easier. But some of the other structures you're talking about, I think would be difficult to do without a union, without collective bargaining,
exactly,
without employment, without the chance to have more of those conversations.
Fair enough. I see that as being, and I think I'm with you, with being the one true complaint where everybody's on the table to be poached at all times. And I understand that, you know, kids have an opportunity. And in Jordan Addison's case, of course, new quarterback, his offensive coordinator gets his salary doubled,
yeah,
by Nebraska and leaves, which is an insane thing, but that's a different story. I understand from Jordan Addison's perspective that he has the opportunity. And look, as if he's showing out at Pitt, he's going to get drafted wherever he should be drafted because there's tape on him. Everybody, Pitt is a big place. But this sort of unofficial free agency tour that's happening with him, I understand why that rubs Pitt fans the wrong way and can turn them off. I don't see a way to combat that reality, even with a transfer window. What do we see with NBA free agency where there are strict guidelines? I think the Bulls just lost a draft pick, right? Because
yeah,
they tampered and signed a player, as they all do, the moment free agency opens. Somehow they're able to negotiate a complicated contract with all sorts of clauses and bonuses in 11 seconds. So
it's pretty amazing, right?
It's not unique to the sport, but like what we're doing is we're saying that things need to be fixed. And at this point, I almost think we just need to lean into and accept the chaos, and you're either in or you're out.
That is possible. I mean, that's part of the reason why I have so much to write about, even
correct,
if, candidly, sometimes I'd like to do something besides NIL,
yeah,
or besides FCS conference realignment, just because like these kind of things keep happening. The challenge, and you're right, maybe the answer is this is just the way things are. I can't think of any other league anywhere at any level that does constant free agency all the time. Like in European soccer,
right,
which I think is in many ways the closest similarity to how a lot of college football works.
Mm-hmm.
It is, there are contracts, but everybody kind of understands they don't really mean anything. But if you are a smaller team, you make a living off transfer fees. And like that can be, that's what you mm-hmm. sell to fans. We're going to find the Portuguese 14-year-old before anybody else does. We're going to get 1.5 good years out of him, and we're going to go sell him to Chelsea for $6 million. And I mean, I'm sure it's a higher number than that. I'm
right,
a bad Brazilian. You know what I mean? Right.
Sure.
And you can't do that if you're a fan of Fresno State because you don't get anything. Maybe the answer is deal with it. Like Fresno State, your lot in life is to come here and get drunk in Fresno and maybe win the Mountain West once every couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I get why people are angry about it. When I tell people, I can talk to people, I can write down what they say, I can look at the legal analysis here. Guys, if I know how to fix the sport, I love you both, I wouldn't be doing this. Like,
right,
I would be fixing the sport.
You'd be paid Oliver Luck money. That's exactly where you
are. Oh my gosh. I'd be one of those six guys that is contractually obligated to be mentioned every time a job opens up, right? Like,
yep,
if a job opens up and you don't put Condoleezza Rice or Oliver Luck or like the one guy at ESPN, like you lose mm-hmm. your blogger license, right?
Yep.
That's what I would be if I knew how to fix these things. But
it's, first of all, I think the NBA is heading there. I don't know if you've heard the term pre-agency. That's real. That's a real term where players at All-Star Weekend are talking like, okay, here's what we're going to
yeah.
do, where Anthony Davis says, I'm just going to stop playing until you trade me. That's
yeah.
just... And so
I heard that in Sunday school growing up. I haven't heard that in sports yet. Like that's
pre-agency,
totally an Old Testament thing. Okay.
Where, yeah,
cool.
Kawhi Leonard says, these are the two places I'm going. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Where there's just that, or they force a trade out. Like I'm done playing here. I don't like them. So we are heading in that direction. To me, it almost seems like the frontier is something novel, like make somebody want to stay. run a program so well, have such a good culture, and educate your players so well across a broad spectrum that you're impressing parents and your parents want you to stay, right? That you have, like, there's this certain amount of agency that just seems much more human now.
Hold on, Dan. Hold on.
Yeah. Sorry.
Are we not referring to the plan that was insinuated, hinted at by visionaries like Dabo Swinney? Innovators
sure.
like Dabo Swinney, who, you know, takes a lot of crap for it. Admittedly,
no,
I'm there,
of course.
But has put an emphasis on, okay, we need to build our own culture here. We're going to recruit our own roster. We're going to go above and beyond to try and do that. He too has suggested the sport needs to be blown up. What does that look like? I'm sure he doesn't have a plan. We don't either. But I'm curious, Matt, like, what does that look like? If we blow this up Big Bang style and we try to put it back together in some way that actually has order and rules and whatnot, are we talking about a European style system where we've got promotion and relegation? Are we talking about some sort of minor league system where, look, the schools don't want to give up the cash cow that is $1 billion worth of network TV rights, where they're now sponsoring a minor league football program? Like, in a perfect world, if this thing goes boom by the end of the decade, like, do we have any sense for what it could look like or should look like?
Should, I don't know if I had the best answer yet, and I might by this summer. Like, I'm legitimate. Like, that's a future
out.
A future story, right?
Yeah,
I can talk a little bit about what it could, because I've talked to people about this, and you know what Swarbrick has mentioned a couple of times about this idea of maybe, I don't know, 50 institutions decide to license their IP and their stadium and their colors and their history to create a U22 football team that's like Oregon Ducks Inc., right?
Right.
And, you know, Learfield or JMI or The Rock runs it or whoever. Mm-hmm. And have that just be college football with contracts that's played on colleges, but it's professional. That is one thing that could really happen. And
sure.
I think Notre Dame's athletic director is correct in that there are going to be universities, even Power Five institutions, that are going to look at that and say, that's not us. That doesn't
right.
align with our ecclesiastical or academic mission. The bishops on our board aren't going to be okay with it. And we actually will do the thing that Jim Delaney threatened to do when we all made fun of him, which is drop down to Division III. Like that, I think, I don't know if that's likely. I think, but that's been in kind of academic reformy circles for a decade. And that idea is getting renewed currency among current leaders. Like,
it's an in or out proposition.
Yeah.
Right? It's a very binary approach to, do you want to be involved in the major business of college football? Do you want to spend the money that it takes? Do you want to do what it takes? Do you want to associate with the program but not have the program be a part of your school? That at least feels honest on a certain
yeah,
level.
Yeah, I think that would be more honest. Another thing that I think could legitimately happen is the NCAA as we know it really does get blown up, and a lot of their duties are then replaced with individual sport federations. So instead
right.
of having a college NCAA college wrestling championship, USA Wrestling takes control of that and says, all right, we're going to have a U22 championship, and that's going to be, you know, operated out of colleges. And then we're going to operate, you know, have the Olympic trials. We're going to do these other things. And USA Wrestling sets eligibility. And we have a lot of these organizations for other things. Maybe we fold men's college basketball into USA Basketball. And
sure.
and that's just how a lot of other sports do it.
Right.
One thing that I think is unlikely, but could honestly happen, is have like a literal federal government minister of sport. And somebody that takes in some of the Olympic trial stuff and college sports and folds it into the state. Like, you know, I think this was last week in Sportico. You saw a suggestion from a large defense contractor saying maybe the military should just offer full scholarships to every Olympic sport athlete in exchange for joining the reserves for a couple of months afterwards. I know, like, a lot of people on Twitter freaked out about that.
Sure.
That's how they do it in Germany. Like that's
yeah.
how other developed countries, you know, do these kind of things. So
mm-hmm.
I don't want to dismiss that completely out of hand. I do think the status quo, where we have a centralized organization in Indianapolis clinging to amateurism plus and trying to bring 360 institutions together to do this, I don't think that's likely to survive the next 5 years.
What also would prevent, I know he's controversial, but let's use Elon Musk, somebody with a lot of money.
Spends it so wisely.
Yeah. From going out to every high school in America and saying, I will take all of your best college football athletes. We're going to build a league. We'll pay you. You don't need to go to college. You don't need to do any of this, but you can still go to the NFL after a couple of years, right? That's still the rule, per my understanding. Like, is that not also a possibility that somebody who is ever so inclined could just set up a separate infrastructure altogether, separate from college?
Structurally, there's nothing stopping that. What's stopping it, I think, for football is just that it costs so much money.
Yeah. Yep.
And we've seen so many startup football leagues, you know, start up and fail. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I think anybody playing in the spring right now is unlikely to still be there in 2 years, no matter mm-hmm. how charming and handsome the Rock is. Like that's just the economies of scale of the sport. We're seeing yeah. this in basketball, right? This is what Overtime Elite yeah. is trying to do. And that's a very well capitalized group that has a teeny tiny market share of that world. And the G League has been trying to do this, and they're propped up by the NBA, and they've been doing this for a decade. And it's only just now, I think, starting to really realistically get its baby legs, or taking baby steps here. So I think for football, you would honestly need somebody with Elon money, and nobody else has Elon money, but Elon. And, and there's only a handful of people that have that much cash and be willing to say, like, not only am I going to try to do this, I'm going to be cool losing money for 20 years.
I'm going to burn it. Yeah.
I'm going to just set it on fire to get people to suddenly care about the Omaha Firehawks or whatever. You know, we have to put a team in Birmingham and Memphis and every other D-list football city to start something like this up. People don't have that kind of money. Yeah. But sure, you could do it. I mean, the real risk would be the NFL deciding to do it.
Right.
And using some of that money. Because I think people forget this. Up until, I want to say, the late 60s or 70s, the NFL had like farm system teams. There was like the Eastern League, where like the Patriots or the Bears might call people up. And you know, then they decided they didn't really want to spend the money on it anymore. Like, that would be more likely to me, I think, than Elon. But of course, right now the NFL's like, we got a pretty good gig, because right now Ohio State, Alabama have to spend all that money.
The other thing, too, is obviously Ohio State, Alabama have built-in fan bases. You're not starting from scratch there, whereas if yep. you throw the Elon money at it, you're kind of back to square one with respect to like USFL, XFL, these other startup leagues that haven't really gotten much traction. The other thing that I wanted to mention here quickly, we've talked a lot about all in or all out as it relates to players being effectively employees, being able to earn money, get contracts, things of that ilk. What's getting awfully big in the window is the NCAA video game. And I wonder from your perspective, Matt, if the NCAA video game is not some sort of conduit to get us from A to B, because presumably everybody in that game stands to make some cut from it. What have you heard? What are people saying behind the scenes about how the video game, just as it did with NIL, could perhaps usher in the next chapter of wherever we stand here with amateurism?
That's a great question, Ty. Here's what I know. Yeah, here's what I know about the game right now. I know that last year, when EA Sports and CLC, the major licensing agency that works with most of these institutions, reached out to all the schools and asked for their participation in the game, what they told them was, hey, what EA wants to do is use current athletes in this game. They want to cut them a check and put them in. And that is our goal. We are working towards a group licensing solution. In the event that we are unable to do that, we are going to still make the game. We're going to randomize the players, and we are not going to include any team builder modes, and we're not going to let users edit the rosters. So we will be a much more restrictive video game than you have before, because otherwise, as we all know, somebody in Operation Sports is going to get the right rosters ready in like 2 hours. And we all
still do it to this day, right?
Sure. Yep. I literally bought a 360 during the pandemic. Like, for this was for business reasons. Right? It was because I wanted to keep playing. Right. What I can tell you then is, like, right now, EA Sports expects every FBS team to be in the game, including the new ones. The James Madison and Jacksonville State, Sam Houston, have indicated they want to participate. They're going to have their stadiums in the game. Mm-hmm. But the holdup is with that group licensing piece. And there actually are a couple of companies that are working in this world right now. Some of you guys may have heard of them. There was the Brandar Group, which has worked with a bunch of schools to set up group licensing for jersey sales. So if you are a Michigan or a North Carolina or Ohio State fan now, you really can buy a jersey with the player's name on it and the player gets a check. It would surprise fans to learn that very few athletes are getting checks with commas in them over jersey sales. It's not a very developed marketplace, but that's happening. What people have told me in this industry, both at the licensing companies, there's two of them, and with EA, is that once a licensing company has acquired a critical mass of athletes under their purview, that EA will cut a check to that company and say, like, all right, you're going to be the licensing agent for us. then people will opt into that deal and we'll cut them a check for, you know, low four figures, I think, for the participation. And we're close to that happening. Like, I expect that to happen in July, sometime in the next 60 days. There are enough schools are working with this, and then it's going to take 6 to 9 months for more athletes to kind of opt in and be a part of it. But it would surprise me if we have this video game next summer that doesn't include likenesses of the specific athletes in it.
And is that the expectation, Matt, that we're going to see this next summer?
Yes. The proposal that was sent out, and I believe, actually, I think the CLC has confirmed this, that the targeted date was, I think, July of 2023.
Wow.
And I can tell you, like, the reason it took so long, because I know a lot of people are like, just reskin 2014 and give it to us now, baby. Like, one, all the design team's gone. It's been two video game consoles since the last game. So the entire infrastructure and architecture has to get blown up. One thing that I didn't realize until I started reporting this, it's apparently really difficult to render a college football stadium. It takes months and thousands of photographs and a lot of computing time. And like they told me, we literally couldn't get that done in a year, even if the game was ready. And so that process has taken a while. The other thing is kind of depressing is it's still hard to get a PlayStation 5. It's like we've had so many chip shortages and so many supply shortages. I don't think this game is actually going to be on the previous generation of systems. And so there's also an incentive to wait a little bit so more people can actually get their hands on this, which wouldn't have been the case before. But yeah, I would look for it next summer. And I am hoping to be able to share more information about what I know about the game soon. There's a couple other things that I've been asked to keep embargoed for a little bit. And I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Like, that's not earth shattering. More information, I think, either through me or other reporters will start to come out later this summer.
My final question is this. It's an impossible one to answer. And so I like that Ty and I have you on every so often, not to yell at you, but to yell within you, in your range. And you're just always like, I hear you. That sounds right.
You would be shocked at how much of my job this has become, because it's the same thing. Like, all right, I'm just going to smile and listen and let you, athletic director at a Power Five school, just scream for a little bit. Like, I'm a reporter and a therapist in that way. So yeah, please go on.
The interesting thing just popped into my brain with athletic directors is, on one hand, you think, oh man, a collective. Well, that's so cool that like we don't have to deal with certain financial realities of attracting recruits. But on the other hand, a major part of an athletic director and administrator's jobs is raising money. And if you're a booster and say, I got $3 million that I normally would donate to building a new indoor facility, but now I'm just giving it to a collective. Is there like weird tension now between collectives and athletic departments?
It's not weird. It's explicit.
Okay.
Like, I'm telling you, a lot of these ADs hate the people that are running the collectives.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why. One, what you just described is exactly a real thing.
Okay.
And I think a smart development person would say, you're giving the money for something different. The $3 million for a quarterback, that guy might transfer in 9 months. You put your name on a building, it's there forever.
Right.
Cut me the check. Here's the other thing, though. And I think we've seen this at places like Texas. And
but that's, by
Tennessee.
The way, that's the selling hope, the collective.
Yeah.
That's where the hope comes in the sport. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, here's the issue. If you are a school that, you know, needs to spend aggressively to be competitive in a bunch of different sports.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you have this group that's consolidated your 15 biggest boosters. That booster group, they're the athletic director now. Like, because if that booster group has accumulated that money and turns off the spigot until you fire a coach, the athletic director doesn't get to make that call anymore. Now it's the boosters. Or they might fire the AD or change anything.
Which it's sort of been, by the way. Boosters have had that power and that threat before, but now it's much more explicit.
It's much more explicit. It's more institutionalized. And then there's the challenge, right? Because if you're the AD at Auburn, your job, one, has some level of public taxpayer accountability. It's your job to make multiple sports function. It's your job to fit in with the university. Mm-hmm. And if you are a guy that made a gajillion dollars selling pressurized lumber, you don't care about any of those things. You just care about recruits. And this also is an issue for coaches. There are coaches that don't like these guys either, because now you're basically creating a shadow general manager. What if you don't want to get somebody, but the booster wants to make the rivals class go up and impress people at the country club? So they're going to go throw money at guys you don't even want. Just coach, you don't really want that. And now they're saying that I want to commit. Or what if a guy wants to transfer because he's not going to play, but he signed a 3-year contract with the collective and now he's stuck here? That sucks for the coach too. A lot of those tensions aren't just about money and philosophy. It's literally about control, right? Who are you empowering and to run things. And I'll just say, like, in my experience, when you look at the programs that have so many resources and still suck, or have not been able to achieve the way they wanted to,
yeah,
this is almost always the reason. Nick Saban's true genius isn't just on a chalkboard. It's that he's been able to unify this entire army of sharks in Alabama to go the exact same way. And that hasn't happened at Texas or Tennessee or Auburn or USC until maybe 2 weeks ago in a long time.
The funny thing is, your language, and this is not your intention, your language is not unlike how people talk about dictators. How they are able to unify various factions from warring within the country. And it's like, you'll hear things like, these are not my words, to be clear, but you'll hear people say things, not to say good things about Mussolini or not to say good things of Saddam Hussein, but everybody fell in line.
Dude,
and
I have
so
said that
crazy, but it's true.
Literally that exact thing on an extra point. So I said, like, these guys are like Josef Tito, like the former dictator of Yugoslavia, bringing together these warring like ethnic groups, and the whole thing kind of fell apart after he left. And it's like, am I saying that Nick Saban needs to be like an 80s dictator? No. Am I saying that there are similarities? Yes. And that is true.
It's so here's my actual final question before talking about like sleep pods no longer happening because boosters are donating all their money to a collective. As a legendary procrastinator, I feel especially qualified to weigh in here. The easiest thing to do here is nothing. Right? The easiest thing to do with all of everybody's complaints is say, it'll work itself out. The market will correct itself, et cetera, et cetera. That seems like the likeliest thing to happen because anybody's ideas are not going to resonate with everybody. So the hardest thing to do here, Will, and this is the same kind of like dictatorial language that we're just talking about, the hardest thing to do here is to get everybody on the same page. And so if the SEC commissioner is not on the same page as the Big Ten commissioner, is not on the same page as the, you know, Mountain West commissioner, how does any effective change actually happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years without some sort of specific event that awakens everybody in some way?
You know, well, that's not an impossible question. And generally, with the NCAA, it's been an external event that has forced change, whether that's been about cost of attendance, scholarship reform. Sometimes it's a recession or COVID or the law forcing people to change. You are right. And there are definitely people who say, let's let the market work itself out. And from my perspective, and maybe this is just because I'm just a nerdy do-gooder, but my concern when we hear that is like whenever you hear the words market correction, in this context, that means somebody had to be corrected. And that generally means someone lost money or was hurt. And that created a change here in the marketplace. The people who are most likely to be disadvantaged when there's a market correction are going to be athletes.
Yep.
It's not going to be boosters, and it's probably not going to be schools. And that also may take a long time. Because this isn't the same kind of marketplace that you learned about in Econ 110, where buyers and sellers have equal access to information and people make rational decisions. There's nothing rational about SEC boosters, guys. There's nothing rational about the people who have lifetime subscriptions on Bucknuts. And I say this as a son of Columbus. Like, that's not what they're doing with their money here.
Right.
So that might take a long time, and that might be easiest, but then people are going to get hurt in that wake.
Yeah, I was going to say...
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, just in terms of like that single event, it does seem like it's only one thing, and that's TV ratings nosediving. Like, in order to affect change, you got to find where the money is and where it's coming from, and then having CBS or ESPN or Fox saying, you know, yesterday's offer is not today's offer, and being able to correlate it specifically to fan apathy and disinterest and disapproval with how the sport has evolved.
And even then...
Even then, that
takes a long time. And then we're operating on the assumption that even that, like, has Major League Baseball reformed itself in the face of declining fan interest and other economic headwinds? They made the bases bigger, but you can see, like, that wasn't a turnkey fix. Hockey wasn't able to make some of those turnkey fixes. And these are, you know, medium to long-term television contracts. We've seen football attendance in decline for a decade. Mm-hmm. And the best idea most people in power seem to be is fix the Wi-Fi, not maybe don't schedule games to 2060 or don't charge $300 for a hot dog or any of these. But, you know, all of this, I think, just assumption that things work itself out, assumes that people are able to quickly make decisions based on that data.
Right.
And I don't want to be like a college sports nihilist, but like, I don't think that's the reality in the lifetimes that we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Again, his
Go Bucks,
name,
baby. Yeah.
Go Bucks. Is, Go Ducks.
Yeah. We
Go
could Bucks. Do like a part 8 series on this stuff for sure. We'll have you back sometime soon. Matt Brown. Matt Brown runs Extra Points with Matt Brown. Talk to us very quickly, Matt Brown, about how people can find you and what you bring to the college football universe.
You bet. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Brown EP. I promise not everything I do is an existential bummer. Like, my entire beat is to try and dig into the stuff that determines who's going to be good on Saturdays. So whether that's FCS conference realignment, whether that's explaining how television media rights contracts work, how your alma mater gets money, how they spend money, how they decide which sports to sponsor and how they're able to be successful. These are the kind of things I dig into so everybody else can go to the press conference and talk about who's going to play quarterback next week. I try to get into the nerd stuff so to free everything else up there. Your athletic director probably reads it. Your conference commissioner probably reads it. Other people in this world do. And it may be something that you would find interesting as well. You can find it at extrapointsmb.com.
extrapointsmb.com. Keep doing the hard work. Keep helping idiots like Dan and I be smarter. When we talk to other folks about it, we, as always, appreciate your time here. This is great.
Hey, fellas, and anytime. It's always my pleasure.
All righty, Dan, there you go. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Matt Brown, always extremely well-read, always the smartest guy in the room as mm-hmm. it relates to these really complex issues that I think many of us, I'll just include myself here, we do not have the benefit of living in that world, understanding the nuances, the complexities, and really seeing how all of these things kind of fit together. We see a passing headline on Twitter. We read an article from Ross Dellinger, which again, I promise to link up in the show notes here. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to make heads or tails of how all of this comes together within the sport. To be fair, I'm not sure Matt knows any more than anybody else, but he at least can provide context to an extent that you or I can't.
He knows a lot more of the context. He knows a lot more of the inner workings and the pulleys and levers that are happening or trying to be pulled and whatever, and in all sorts of different directions behind the scenes. So he's an invaluable resource and a terrific guest because he could be very dry. We have spoken to people on and off the show who are very dry about the subject matter, but Matt happens to be a talented broadcaster and guest at the same time. No, my mind, obviously, if you listen to the totality of the interview, my mind goes to a number of very strange places in thinking about this subject live. But man, it so much makes so little sense that I'm almost coming around to that's the appeal. The appeal is that this is the most nonsensical sport and we're always trying to fix something that is unfixable, that should never be fixed. And there's always going to be something that is going to destroy the sport. And it doesn't, because I think fundamentally people understand that college football stands alone in its lack of sense.
It's SimCity. It's SimCity 2022. There's
sure.
always the tornado or the Godzillatron or Godzillatron, whatever.
No, that's cool.
That's going to stop by and destroy your arcology.
Yeah. Do you, by the way, do you play Wordle? Is that a thing that you participate in?
Yeah, every day.
Just because you said adieu when we started, and that's a five-letter word, that's a very popular opening word.
Yeah.
Do you have an opening word or set of opening words for your Wordle? And I know there's like a college football Wordle, and there's all. I don't do any of the offshoot Wordles. I'm just a purist.
No, I am as well. I go with tears. T-E-A-R-S.
That's pretty good.
Because I want to get the T, I want to get the E. I want to get the R and the S in there. The problem that I have, though, is
no,
actually...
No, I figured when you said the word that you want those letters. Yeah.
Correct. That's correct assumption. Yeah. The problem that I have actually is with my second word and with
that's
the
tough.
Strategy around that. Because if you get three letters mm-hmm. in your opening word, you're inclined to keep guessing to get it in uh-huh. two tries. Oftentimes you don't. Or oftentimes you get two of the three letters in the right spot. They turn green. And then you keep guessing before you know it. You're on try six. So where I've tried to perhaps tweak my own algorithm here is figure out what do I do in word two? to put myself in the optimal position to guess
totally.
It to three.
It's, you know what it is? It's success rate. It's SP plus. How do you stay ahead of the chains? Right?
I believe that is correct assumption. Yeah.
This Wordle is vocabulary advanced grammar metrics. That's all it is. It's who's efficient at staying ahead of the chains. Who has that strategy? I'll start with, it's funny. I consider myself to be of average intellect, but I'm pretty good with words. And I was on a game show called Lingo that was Wordle. So like I have just the tiniest, not a word, background in this kind of thing. And I will, let's say I start with the word crane or stern.
Is that your word? What is your word?
It's a rotation. If I'm feeling heavy vowel in a morning, I'll go with ado or audio. By the way, stay on brand, tie. You get the A-U and I and O.
Yeah.
Just D is not incredible. But if it's a Tuesday that I'm feeling vowels, I'll go there. Crane is pretty consistent. That gets, you know, the R and the N, the A and the E, whatever. But the second word thing is very real. Not when you have three letters. If I put in crane and they're like, hey, there's an E in this word, and that's all you know, my first reaction will be, where do I even start?
Yeah.
What five-letter word has an E? You get to feel very dumb right away, which is pretty regular for
me. What I've been doing with friends, and actually you gave me this idea.
Yeah.
You mentioned that some folks were treating it like golf. Mm-hmm. With a par four. And so now every morning on a text thread with friends, I have to send in my score. We keep track of 18 whole rounds. We're on round number three now. We've been doing this for, you know, whatever the math is, however many days. And there is a real expectation that if I get a five or above, this is the end of the world. I'm going to lose shots.
One of my favorite things with Wordle, which I just adore Wordle, I saw a clip of a podcast. Bert Kreischer, comedian, was talking about a strategy somebody told him with Wordle. And the strategy is you start with three words and you don't pay attention to what is or is not in those words. But the three words cover basically every potential common letter. And so he starts with audio, crest, and nymph. And by your fourth guess, no matter what's in that first word, that audio word, you will have four of the five basically every single time by your fourth guess.
I'm right. Audio, crest, and nymph.
Nymph, N-Y-M-P-H.
Yeah.
And I saw that there was a think piece or there was some sort of like response video saying, is this ethical? does this land within the spirit with which Wordle was originally intended? And I love that we now have think pieces on Wordle, something that's just so innocent and beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that an ethical strategy to blindly shoot letters for three of your first
six guesses?
I think
it is. I'm going to start doing that. I like that.
I say it's not, but I understand why somebody would do that. You just, because it takes the sort of strategy out of it. It takes the it takes your brain out of it. And it's supposed to be a brain teaser of sorts.
You could still fumble.
Oh, you totally
not
could.
Get the word, right?
Right. But it's just the idea of for some people, this was not my strategy. However briefly I was on those dating apps, for some people, they just swipe yes for everybody and see what, you know, it's the, like throwing dynamite into the lake and see what fish pop up, you know? By the way, humans are not fish, to be clear. But that's that, you know, you're not actually paying attention and you're not actually thinking through the swipe right or swipe left or what your second guess or third guess is going to be. It's just the scorched earth and see what comes up when it does.
I'm glad we had this conversation.
So you're going to try it tomorrow and you're going to see how you feel about it.
I'm going to try it. Yeah. I want to see how I feel about it. I want to see how it makes me feel as I go through my day.
Yeah. Right. The ethics of just throwing letters against the wall.
Solidverbal at gmail.com, as always, is the email address. Don't forget to go on out to solidverbal.com if you want to find our old episodes. We are also on Apple and Spotify and anywhere you can find a podcast. If you've made it this far, why not hit the subscribe button? Why not hit the follow button? You're already in for a diamond for a dollar.
No brainer.
We would definitely love to have you as part of our Verballerhood. If nothing more, go on out to Spotify and give us a 5-star rating. I almost said review. That helps. It really does. Don't forget to follow along on YouTube. Dan and I have been posting clips from all of our shows out there. We've been trying to do a little bit of a better job here through our off season, figure out what works and what doesn't work. Verballers.com.
The Solid Verbal, right? The Solid Verbal.
The
on
Solid
YouTube?
Verbal, yeah. Yeah, The Solid yeah. Verbal.
On... Yeah, or you can find us. It's Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast will...
Yeah, yeah. Go on out to YouTube. We're posting stuff out there on a pretty recurring basis. Verballers.com is the aforementioned Patreon where you can find some of the bonus stuff and join up with our community of super verballers. And last but not least, solidgiveaway.com. Win that signed mini helmet from Frank Beamer, a legend.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Dan Rubenstein, fun show.
And with that, I bid you a fond adieu, A-D-I-E-U. Yeah.
My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That fine gentleman over there is Dan Rubenstein. We will be back next week. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace. Also a 5-letter word. Huh. 2 E's. Yeah.